This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
And raffles.
For full details, go to kboo.fm and click on Once in a Boo Moon under KBOO Events. All proceeds go to benefit KBOO, your community radio station.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is 10 a.m. Coming up on Flashpoints, your host Dennis Bernstein reports that Obama will nominate subprime queen and Hyatt Regency billionaire Penny Pritzker to be the next Secretary of Commerce. And more on the confirmation hearings for John Brennan, the nominee for CIA chief. At 11 on The Digital Divide, host Rabia Yemin interviews Cory Doctorow about his newest science fiction novel, Homeland, copyright and fair use, Aaron Schwartz, and digital activism. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. Stay tuned for Flashpoints.
Flashpoints, Obama getting ready to nominate subprime queen and Hyatt Regency billionaire Penny Pritzker to be the next Secretary of Commerce. Also, administration point man for the Obama drone assassination program and nominee for CIA chief John Brennan on the Hill for confirmation hearings. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. Well, John Brennan was testifying before Congress as a matter of his confirmation hearings to be CIA nominee. Stop CIA murder was the message that opened the confirmation hearings of CIA nominee and drone war architect John Brennan Thursday afternoon as he faced the Senate Intelligence Committee. And joining us to talk about, well, this could have been a rare opportunity, you say, Ray McGovern, for the Senate Intelligence Committee on John Brennan's hearing to to find out some information about what the White House has been up to in terms of illegal assassination programs. Welcome to Flashpoints, Ray.
Thanks, Dennis. I thought it'd be a great opportunity to find out, as Ron Wyden from Oregon put it, the American people should have a right to know when the government thinks that they can assassinate you. You know all the business about the Office of Legal Counsel opinion, that some of which was made available to the Senate committee late last night and early this morning, but not available to staffers on those committees. And if you know how Congress works, that means not available. So, in other words,
because the staffers read all the information and then they write 10 questions, and that's how we get good questions.
Yeah. Right. But there wasn't even time to read the executive summary this morning. And if I were Dianne Feinstein and had any sense of a propriety here, I would have seen this as a executive branch overreach. She had been asking for these documents for many, many months, and for them to give them the night before was really an indignity that she shouldn't have to suffer. But suffer the congressmen and senators gladly do. And I guess the main thing I took from today was the concrete evidence that, you know, after everyone said after 9/11 everything changed. Well, with respect to congressional oversight, that goes in spades. There's no oversight now. What we have are a bunch of congressional overlookers. And that came through really clear in some in almost humorous ways. Jay Rockefeller, okay, senator from West Virginia, he's done some good things for West Virginia. He's been poisoned with respect to national security policy, and he was ranking member and then later chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. What did he complain about? Well, he complained about, gosh, you know, everything's so secret. We can't say anything. I remember, he says, when the chairman, Pat Roberts from Kansas, and I, we were the only ones that were allowed to hear these secrets, but they were so secret that when Pat Roberts and I drove back in the car, we were not allowed to speak to each other about the secrets. I said, oh, gosh, you know, who says? That the chair and the ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee can't discuss what they've just been told in a secure environment in a car. Well, that's how free they are. And Rockefeller is, I guess, maybe the quintessential one percenter proof of this. You may recall that when Cheney took Pat Roberts and Jay Rockefeller into his confidence and said, in effect, despite the law, we are going to eavesdrop on Americans without a court warrant, and we just want to let you know about that. Well, to hear Jay Rockefeller describe it later, he said, I thought this extraordinary. So I went back to my office, and of course I couldn't share this with my secretary, so I wrote, and I couldn't put it down on a typewriter or a keyboard. I wrote a longhand thing about what Dick Cheney had just said to me, and I put it in my personal file, in my file cabinet.
Yes. So he told his file cabinet.
Yeah, well, you know what happened later? When Dick Cheney's going out of office, Jay Rockefeller writes him a little letter and says, hey, you know, I wrote a little numcon about what you told me about about eavesdropping an American, and now I can't find it. Could you maybe just what you told me and send it to me? And I could just see Cheney going, whoa, what a wuss. He can't even find his own memo. So that's the kind of oversight that's being exercised. And it came through in spades. A lot of posturing. But aside from Ron Wyden and a few other stalwarts, there were no real questions asked.
All right. Well, let's talk about questions, Ray. You worked for the Central Intelligence Agency for many years. You know how things work in government. If you were asking the questions, what are the questions that you would have asked today to John Brennan?
Well, he's the counterterrorism advisor, right? So I would have said, John, what do you suppose drives terrorists? I mean, we have all this talk about countering them, but has anybody explored why terrorists do the things that they do? Now, I had tried to get my senator, Senator Warner from Virginia, to ask that question, but he wouldn't. He'd ask some sort of other thing.
Well, but John Brennan said we do this because these are people who are threatening the United States. They want to kill us, and so we have to kill them.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much what he said. What he said in response to a question by Helen Thomas, a brave soul that she is, when she was still with the White House press corps. The scene was 2 weeks after Abdulmutallab tried to have that underpants bomb go off in the plane over Detroit and down and kill about 200 American on that plane. So there was sort of an inquest or a press conference 2 weeks after, and the president led it off, and he said, you know, this was really a failure. We have to do better on the intelligence side. But John Brennan's going to tell you all about it. Well, they got talking about, you know, extra security measures at the airport and all that kind of stuff. And before you know it, we had Helen Thomas saying, now, John Brennan, could you tell me what the motives are? What motivates these terrorists? And he said, well, here it is. Al-Qaeda is an organization that uses the banner of religion in a very perverse way. So Thomas says, why, Brennan? This is a long issue, but Al-Qaeda is just determined to carry out attacks here and against the homeland. Thomas, but you haven't explained why. So what Brennan would have us believe is that these Islamo-fascists or these Islamic terrorists, they're hardwired at birth, you know? And during the seventh month, apparently, they get infused with this hatred of America, and that's just it. So we have to kill them all, or we have to drone strike them all. I mean, if he really believes that, I suppose you can't rule that out, you know?
Of course, you would have to blank out things like, you know, what happened at the end of the first Iraq war when the U.S. mowed down, what, about 100,000 people on the desert? I'm sure many of those soldiers had children. They're angry now.
Yeah, that's it. You know, Brennan was talking about how pinpoint these Hellfire missiles shot from drones are. And he said, Yemen, of course, is a good example of where we've really implemented these policies. And then he said, oh, but by the way, you know, it's not been real good in Yemen because there's more terrorism there than ever before. And, of course, the figures are, and this is by established counterterrorism experts, 3 years ago, before we started the drone use in Yemen, there were about 200 to 300 al-Qaeda. And now, 3 years later, they're well in excess of 1,000 al-Qaeda and growing. I mean, the idea is that these drone strikes are poison for every person killed, and most of them are civilians. For every person killed, they have an extended family of 100 people who will never forget that they were done in, their dear ones were done in by American missiles. So, you know, the policy is ridiculous on its face, but still more sinister, of course, is the claim the fact that the president arrogates to himself the power of life and death over not only terrorists, but also American citizens suspected of being terrorists. And, of course, you know that that comes out of this legal opinion, part of which was released to the committee early this morning. So the question really is, and should have been really pursued in a much more direct way, where does a president of the United States get off acting like King John before the Magna Carta 800 years ago? You know, there's a whole 8 centuries of jurisprudence based on what those gutsy barons at Runnymede wrested from King John, okay? Habeas corpus in the whole 9 yards. And what do we have? Well, right now, 2 years away from celebrating that 800th anniversary, the question in my mind is, will it be a funeral or an inquest? Will it be a post-mortem? Or will it be something we can be really proud of? Because all of us, you and me and all those people who are in the back of that hearing room today, that we got out in the streets and we said, no, we're at least as gutsy as those English barons. We're going to insist on habeas corpus and the other rights that we have, part of which, of course, are guaranteed by the Fifth Amendment, which says no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So the president should not be allowed to get away with that. And again, what did Rockefeller say? Well, after he dismissed the torture, he said, well, that was just a disaster. But now tell me, John Brennan, is it true that only the president can authorize strikes that kill people by drones? Well, you know, Rockefeller's a liar. What do you mean, only the president? Nobody can authorize those things without due process. It says it in the Constitution. And there are millions of us, Dennis, millions of us that swore to defend and support the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. So, you know, a genuine question in my mind is this. What do we do? I've checked into it with the lawyers. There's no expiration date on the oath, the solemn oath that I took as an Army officer to support and defend the Constitution. So what do? When we watch people playing fast and loose with our rights, Fifth Amendment, Fourth Amendment, you name the amendment, they violated most of them. And what do? Well, the answer, in my view, is we have to remember, as Dr. King said, there is such a thing as too late. We have to remember what happened in Germany, where people, where the clergy, where the lawyers, first and foremost, could not find their voice. It's up to us. There never has been any other. We got to get out in the street, just like those gutsy people from Code Pink did today in the back of that hearing room. It was terrific. They delayed the hearing for about 20 minutes, and they told me later that they knew that I was in the dentist chair and that I couldn't get home to watch them until 20 after it started. But they were kidding, of course. What they did was really disrupt the proceedings by calling Brennan out for what he is. And I have to say...
What is he?
Well, he's a facilitator of whatever his boss wants to do. And his boss is the one that's responsible. That's where the buck stops. He's killing people illegally, unconstitutionally. And the sorrowful thing is that the senators didn't step up to that challenge. They didn't really hold Brennan or his folks accountable. And that's very, very, very sad.
Speaking with Ray McGovern, who writes, a former CIA analyst who writes for ConsortiumNews.com, and we're talking about the confirmation hearings today, John Brennan, for Director of Central Intelligence. And we're going to play in just one moment, we're going to play some of the sound from last year's drone summit on the killings and the real impact on the ground. But the one question I want, and you addressed this in your article today for Consortium, but I didn't hear anybody ask the question to Brennan, now what was the constitutional authority to kill the 16-year-old son of Anwar al-Awlaki? How do you, what was the justification there? An American, a 16-year-old American who wasn't doing anything except living until they knocked him out.
Well, you know, the Bible says that the sins of the father can be visited on the son. Oh, well, maybe I got that wrong. No, it says just the opposite. This young man, 16 years old, was the son of the Awlaki, who was the preacher here and was in very good order with the administration right after 9/11, but then saw what we were doing in Muslim countries and turned completely. Now, I'm willing to concede that there may be good evidence. I'd like to see it, but there may be good evidence that he was actually a leader of Al-Qaeda in Yemen. That still doesn't give anyone the right to kill him outright. The question of...